1, 2, 3. Hit it.
If the nightingale could sing like you, it'd sing much sweeter than they do. 'Cause you've brought a new kind of love to me.
Linoleum knife.
That was me impersonating the Marx Brothers, impersonating Maurice Chevalier.
As you can tell, we are still without a cassette player. We had an adventure today. We went looking for a new cassette player / vintage 80s boombox.
But someone...
Not someone.
Someone didn't do the research.
No. I did the research. The research that I did said that the place was open. We were going to some pawn shops, and most of them were closed, but this one place said it was open on the internet.
Everything is true.
Then the internet was not true. They closed now on Sundays, mm-hmm. although they used to be open. You would think they would have stayed open as the...
For the lack of competition.
For the lack of competition, but no, they now observe... The Evangelical Sabbath.
The Lord's Day.
The Lord's Day. And so we just didn't do it. And now, and everyone loved it so much. When I sang the made-up song last week.
Really? Everyone?
Everyone.
It? Has there been clamoring?
Yes.
Funny, because I read the mail and I...
No, everyone. Everyone that... Oh, look what I just did.
Wow. A minute 47. That may be a new record for Dave White Hits the Mic. If you had that on your bingo card at home, go ahead and mark it now.
Everyone loved it when I sang. People thought it couldn't be done, but it was done. Mm. I can... I'm a singer. You're listening to Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
This is a podcast of the cinema.
It sure is.
You're John Doe, and I am Exene. Except not divorced.
Yes.
And not remarried to Viggo Mortensen.
No.
And not divorced from Viggo Mortensen, and not petitioning the court for more post-Lord of the Rings child support.
No. And now living a few blocks away from the Circus of Books, where they apparently once used to share an apartment.
Just a few blocks away?
Yeah, wasn't it that one? That's what I heard.
Wait, we live a few blocks away from that Circus of Books.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, not they, not she.
No, us.
Not Miss Cervenka.
No. I'm sure she's in a far better neighborhood now.
I hope she is. I hope she got all she could get out of him.
Out of Viggo or John Doe? Or
out of Viggo. Oh. I don't think she hangs with Viggo anymore. She still hangs with her ex, John Doe, though, as a participant in the band.
Right.
Very Fleetwood. Now, we do live merely 1.5 blocks away from their original apartment, as seen in the great movie, The Decline of Western Civilization.
And
where they used to live above the Circus of Books.
And that they wrote the song Adult Books about.
Yes. Yeah. And so, because this used to be a very punk rock neighborhood. Did you know that?
Yes.
The Starwood Lounge, which hosted many a punk rock band of the late 70s and early 80s, is that... Russian restaurant.
The Traktir?
Yeah.
Now the only thing punk rock about this neighborhood is that Dave White lives here. And you are Dave White of Movies.com.
That's not true. I'm not the only thing. Original old school punk rock person and man we know, Mr. Dave Markey.
Oh, that's true. He does live in the neighborhood too.
He's always lived here.
Director of 1991, The Year Punk
Broke. Yeah, and Desperate Teenage Love Dolls and many Sonic Youth videos.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you're Dave White, and I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick.
What? I was dealing with my tea.
Yes, you were.
What did you say?
I just entered.
You looked at me like I was supposed to say something next.
I introduced myself, and then I thought you were going to pick up the
ball. Oh, I'm Dave White, and I was very... Look, I'm Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com. I really had a lot of important tea-related issues on my mind just not 15 seconds ago.
That's how punk rock you are. We are still without a tape deck.
Yeah, it's coming. We'll get it. Until then, enjoy us and how we sing.
Yes, our vocalizes.
Next week, we'll do a duet of Nothing Compares to You.
I think Jackson
Well, yeah, that would be a good one. I did a duet of Nothing Compares to You with Gary Cotti the night we went to karaoke.
I missed that.
Do you remember that?
I don't think I was at that.
You were there.
Is this the same night that you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The night I killed it on Kylie's Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I do remember, yes.
I destroy that song at karaoke.
You destroy all the songs at karaoke.
I was good. I sang Lynn Anderson's I Never Promised You a Rose Garden
right.
that night. I was real good at that.
Yeah, not in her octave.
I sang Merle Haggard's Mama Tried, which is my best karaoke jam.
That is in his octave, I think.
And I mean, it's my tied with Kylie. I Can't Get You Out of My Head. That's my other karaoke jam.
My jam usually is Ben Folds Five Song for the Dumped.
That's not a jam. But that's a provocation.
Once people discover that song is in their karaoke,
they
song,
get it. They I take it out.
Scratch it out.
They yes. take it out because it's profane.
Yes,
and not nice. Kylie's nice. So is Merle Haggard and Lynn Anderson and Sinead O'Connor. Perhaps you should start singing songs that people like when you are karaokeing.
Everyone likes it when I sing Song for the Dumped. Everyone.
So I was just making this really great lap sang souchong tea and just marveling once again at the gigantic size of the 1 pound bag that you got me for Christmas of lap sang souchong tea. That you thought would fit into my Christmas stocking.
It would have fit in your Christmas stocking.
It's the size
of... Had I gotten you nothing else
in your Christmas stocking. It's the size of a gallon of milk.
Oh, come on.
It is... The bag is as big... Okay, it's the size of a half gallon of milk.
Yeah, it's
that
close.
Bag. It doesn't weigh...
No.
It just weighs a pound because it's a pound of tea. But a pound of tea takes up a lot of space. It was so great because you're like, oh, this was supposed to fit in your Christmas stocking. Didn't.
I figured.
I don't deserve it.
I figured if I didn't find.
I deserve enough, all the things
if,
I get.
If I didn't find enough stuff for your stocking, it would take up a good chunk of space, and you know, my real estate would be covered there. You know.
It just means you need to use an overflow stocking.
Yes.
For more presents.
It's true.
That's what I deserve.
It's what you want.
It's what I deserve.
What you deserve.
It's what I deserve. Look. I've been a really good spouse for almost 19 years now, and really, gifts are due to me. They're due me.
Yeah. That's great.
What are we? We're talking about movies.
We are.
Because we are professional film critics.
Can't you tell?
And one of them was The Monuments Men. We both saw that film.
Yes.
Why don't you tell people what happens in The Monuments Men, directed by George Clooney, co-written by George Clooney, starring George Clooney and Matt Damon and John Goodman and Bob Balaban and Bill Murray and
Jean Dujardin.
Jean Dujardin.
And Lord Grantham. It's based on a true story.
Hugh Bonneville.
And it's getting to where the words "based on a true story" are really
not getting to where it does. It's never really meant anything.
I'm not saying that.
Go watch that Van Gogh movie with Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, I'm not saying that movies suddenly have less veracity. I just mean that it's become a sign of like this is gonna blow chunks.
This is gonna be about nothing that ever happened.
Yes, essentially. Like in fact, I think the ad campaign for Winter's Tale is this is not a true story. Like even they know. So anyway, it is based on a true story. It's about an actual squadron of art experts who were dispatched into the European theater in the waning days of World War II to recover and rescue art treasures from around Europe that Hitler's men had been originally collecting for a Führer museum that he was going to open. And then in the waning days when it looked like things were not going so well, you know, around that moment from Downfall that everybody likes to use on YouTube, Hitler gets really upset. He apparently was adopting a scorched earth policy of like, let's destroy as much of this stuff. If I can't have it, no one does.
I want someone to do a Hitler Finds Out About Monuments Men movie. So, we were much more exciting than this.
Who are these characters? So George Clooney, you know, gets the band together, and it's like, you know, it's an architect and an art historian and a Broadway director, and like
we don't know why he's there.
They zip through the first part really quickly, and I think maybe the idea was, hey, everybody knows and loves John Goodman and Bob Balaban and Bill Murray. We don't have to tell you anything about them because
Stripes,
Murray, yeah, you know. So we kind of zip through the let's meet everybody and put them through, you know, basic training, blah blah blah. And then boom, out they split up into teams of two and run around Europe and find sculptures and rescue paintings and stuff. But who are they? We don't know. And so then when they're supposed to be getting on each other's nerves or having specific banter that is based on the presumption of knowledge of who these characters are and how they would interact.
Why they interact the way they do.
It means nothing. Yeah. Like Bill Murray and Bob Balaban are needling each other the whole time.
The entire film.
Why?
You don't know why.
We don't know.
Do they really hate each other? Or are they just busting each other's balls? You don't exactly know why.
But who knows? So there are some cool ideas. And I mean, I think they're working from a really great, you know, source material. The idea that the government would put the effort into, you know, sending these guys out there, you know, it could have been the basis for like good comedy, good action drama kind of stuff. But it just doesn't wind up being much of anything in any direction that's particularly interesting, unfortunately. In my review, I talked about how, remember when we invaded Iraq?
Yes.
There was that whole thing where, you know, we were so busy protecting the oil ministry and all the paperwork there that, like, the Baghdad museums all got looted. And
right.
All this, like, these irreplaceable stuff got taken away. So, you know, it's at least a sort of a nod to an era where we paid more attention to that sort of thing. But, yeah, it's just not very compelling as a drama. Cate Blanchett turns up as this woman who's been forced to be a secretary to some Nazi guy. But she's
sniveling Nazi guy.
Yeah, but yeah. She's clearly down for the resistance
right.
And winds up helping Matt Damon find this warehouse full of stuff. And, of course, they find all these things that were seized from different people. And, you know, as Ben pointed out, like, they have to have the conversations like, what is all this stuff? And, you know, like, it was taken from people. Well, who?
Jews.
You know. Hello, work with me here, McFly. Yeah, this movie is a lot of nothing.
Okay, Blanchett tries to make it nice in the bedroom with Matt Damon too, but that doesn't work for her because he's devoted to his wife and child.
Yes, but again, out of
spoiler,
out of nowhere, not explained, not made particularly interesting. Yeah, this is kind of a snooze. There's already a good documentary on this subject called The Rape of Europa.
Yes,
there are a couple
based
of,
on a book,
right.
As well. If you're a reading person,
and there's yeah. Now is there a separate book called The Monuments Men?
I think so.
Or is this all the same?
But I no, don't quote me on that.
Anyway, if you want to know, if you'd like to read more about it, there's plenty out there to find out about this in this genuinely heroic and cool thing that was accomplished during World War II. This movie, however, is not worth it.
It's, it's just not, it's so boring.
He's going for a sort of jaunty Turner Classic Movies kind of vibe, yeah. Like Alexander
Desplat. To the point where the score is half done whistled.
Yeah, the Alexander Desplat score is so like,
the bogey,
you know, the Colonel
Bogey
March.
Yeah. And,
some of them die, and it means nothing.
Yeah, you're like, oh, that I like that dude. Why did he have to die? But then the movie is sort of like, oh well, you know, like, and then later they say that, you know, one of them by sacrificing his life really sort of redeemed his character because he was apparently he had been living in disgrace, but you don't know why he had been living
exactly.
in disgrace.
He was a
you
drunk.
Do, you don't know anything about him, so.
I think if they had cut 20 or so minutes from the later, not all that interesting, let's run around and rescue art part and put it up in the front and told us who all these people were, that would have helped immeasurably.
And tonally, it's all over the place. You know, it's half comic. It lurches into, you know, oh, we found a barrel,
bunch of gold teeth.
Barrel full of gold teeth, you know, and... You're not supposed to, you don't know how you're supposed to feel. You know, it's like, is there going to be a joke? Is this going to be a joke here?
Yeah, there are,
like,
there are jokey.
Are we
going to
make a joke about the gold teeth? Like, we make jokes about landmines and other, you know, not and Nazi jokes and
Picasso paintings being scorched.
goofing on Matt Damon's inability to speak French.
And oh, God. Which is funny the first two or three times.
Right.
And they run that joke into the ground.
But here's my biggest... you know what my biggest problem with this film is?
I'm sure it's something art-related.
It's not.
Oh, okay. What?
It's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Oh, yes. You were a good detective on this.
So it's like a rock in my shoe the minute it happened. At one point in the film, a relative of one of the soldiers sends him one of those. Back in the day, you used to be able to record your own records.
Go to a place.
Yeah, back in the 40s and 50s. You could go to a place or a booth or whatever and send a message to someone on a record. So he gets a letter in the mail, which is in the form of a record. It's sort of like, hello, Dad, we miss you. We're very sorry that you're not with us here. It's Christmas time. And so then she sings Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Now,
it's 1944, which is when Meet Me in St. Louis.
Meet Me in St. Louis is already out. But here's where the time travel happens, because she proceeds to saying, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas is a book by Alonzo Duralde. can buy it.
We'll be telling you all about it in about 6 months.
Yeah. She proceeds to sing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas with the lyrics from 1957.
That were altered for Frank Sinatra.
For Frank Sinatra. She sings the Frank Sinatra 1957 version with the Hang a Shining Star Upon the Highest Bough.
Instead of Until Then We'll Have to Muddle Through Somehow.
Indeed, and that is bad.
Well, also,
don't think there's always someone somewhere with a big nose who knows.
Also annoying about that scene is that stupid Shawshank Redemption moment where the music starts playing on the loudspeakers and everyone stops what they're doing and wistfully looks up and remembers a better time.
Yeah.
If I never see that shot in a movie again.
So I think George Clooney wants to make movies that feel like George Clooney's personality. He wants them to be sort of,
jovial.
Jovial. The chill, suave, handsome ladies man who also recommends really good books to you. Like, he wants to be the most interesting man in the world.
Right.
That everyone wants to be with, and he wants his films to have that same kind of feeling. You can feel that he's trying to be that guy in this movie. This movie feels like it wants to be like that.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to material, that he picks as an actor or even as a writer and director, I mean, I think he's got good taste. I just don't think he has the chops to see it all the way through. Like, this movie on paper is a cool idea.
Yep.
And, I was reading somewhere that Clooney, for all of his fame, the only films that he's ever done that really opened big are the Oceans movies.
Yeah.
So for him to, figure out a way to, how do I do another sort of group caper kind of thing, but,
right,
with more serious kind of pretensions to it,
yes,
this is the movie that you make. Unfortunately, you then should hire Steven Soderbergh to direct instead of doing it yourself, because you're not very good at this.
This is a bummer. And it's an especial bummer for me, because it combines two of my favorite obsessive things. I'm hugely interested in art. Art history, contemporary art, all of it. I am always running off to some gallery or museum or reading about art somewhere, it is a thing that I do after I am done doing this job and after I am done baking chocolate chip cookies. And then the subject of World War II is an ongoing fascination for me. I will watch anything about World War II. I will.
You watched the entire Ken Burns
thing. I sure did. And any old movie about guys in World War II doing stuff, it doesn't have to be important stuff. It just has to be about guys in World War II doing stuff. I'll watch it on TCM or whatever. Technically, this movie fits into that mold. Guys doing stuff during World War II.
Yes, yes. Stuff is done by
guys.
But
it's just not interesting stuff.
No.
And And it's art stuff, which should really be up my alley. It's just not a good film.
My favorite part was where the Nazis destroy all the contemporary art.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
All those Damien Hirsts.
The melting Jeff Koons bunnies.
Yeah. No. Jeff Koons is actually off to the side singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas with the wrong lyrics.
Well, the big movie of the weekend is the Lego Movie.
Which is great.
Which has everyone is crazy about. And I liked. And somehow that makes me the bad person.
You're a bad person for not liking it at all.
You know who has my back on this?
Yeah.
No hate mail receiver Bibbs.
Oh, really?
He says it's a good movie, but why everybody's going crazy? Like, is it because January was so bad that any movie that's remotely competent comes along?
There were two okay movies in January. Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, and Jack, what's his face?
Jack Reacher.
The Spy Who Loved Me.
Ghost Protocol.
Yeah. They were okay. And everything else was a steaming pile of turd. Seriously, maybe one of the worst Januaries
in recorded
for new releases, new releases in recorded history. Yes. And so... possibly we were just hoping for something good. This is a very good, very, very funny, really delightful film.
Why don't you tell them what it's about?
Well, Legos. This Lego named Emmett. He's a construction worker. He is not special. In any way, he is not smart, he is not imaginative, he does not have ideas. Everything he does is what everyone else does. Every song he likes is what everyone else likes. In fact, everyone likes just one song. The song Everything Is Awesome by the Lonely Island Guys.
And Mark Mothersbaugh, I think.
And Mark Mothersbaugh? Okay, well, it's a song that everyone sings for hours and hours and hours and hours, all day, over and over. It will be stuck in your head after you see this film, and you'll want to kill yourself. But he learns through Morgan Freeman as a old spiritual wizard that he is the chosen. That he is the chosen meant to fight the evil lord business.
The special.
The special.
Yes.
He's the special. Meant to fight the evil lord business. Who is all about conformity and making people do, you know, all the stuff he wants to do. I'm getting the plot details roughly accurate here.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what the plot is. The plot is that he is the hero.
Right.
The unlikely hero.
Yes.
The idiot hero.
Yes.
The hero who is dumb and has no skills.
The accidental hero.
But who must, wait for it, believe in himself. In order to become the hero.
Right.
The insidious democratization of heroism
mm-hmm.
that has been perpetrated on us by films for a very long time now, at least two decades or more. The Matrix has a lot to answer for in this regard. And I am now telling you what's wrong with the movie before we get back to what's right with it. This is the worst element of the film. This know-nothing, idiot person who becomes the hero. Now, the only reason I'm saying that this is terrible is because it's a terrible trend.
Yeah.
This movie takes this terrible trend and kind of redeems itself by being really, really, really fast-paced and witty and charming. It's delightful. It is... That same style of comedy aimed at kids that you get from the Cartoon Network, really, where it is assumed that a bunch of stoners are creating entertainment for children. It's this very laid-back, chill bro, look, what if a pizza could talk? Sure, let's make the pizza talk. I'm all in favor of that. I watch a lot of Cartoon Network, and I'm not a stoner. I just like it. I just like that style of humor. It's very young, it's very fresh, and it feels it feels energetic to me. It feels like, you know, where things are going, and I'm happy about that.
It is zippy and poppy and colorful, and it is funnier more often than it isn't. I didn't think it was as funny as you did, but it is most.
I laughed nonstop. It is until the third act thing we're not going to reveal. No.
Even before then, though, I was not like 100% on board with the movie, but I was enjoying it enough that I was like, well, this is a nice February distraction. It's certainly better than I would have imagined any movie that's a long toy commercial would have been.
Yes.
But I wasn't, you know, it wasn't blowing my mind. I was having a nice time.
It's visually inventive.
Yes, definitely.
What appears to be stop motion or digital.
It's all CG.
A combination of the two. Really, it's all CG.
Yeah, I don't think it's any actual objects.
The representation of things in the Lego world.
I mean, the way they use
all Legos.
Everything is plastic, you know, like bullets and water and whatever, you know. I liked the sort of crazy mix and match of it. Somebody said this is the first movie to really embrace remix culture.
I agree with that. Who said that?
I forget. But it's, you know, yeah, it is the idea of throwing all the toys on the carpet and playing them with all of them at the same time, even if they don't belong in each other's universe. You know, in my review on movies.com, I said, it's like, you know, Barbie and Pokemon go into G.I. Joe's fort to battle the dread Raggedy Andy.
Which is essentially what Toy Story does too, but this does it in a much more frenetic and cool way.
Right. But also,
it doesn't have the depth of the Toy Story films on any level. And anyone who tells you that it does is just overly excited.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about it, though, is that, I mean, Toy Story mixes and matches different kinds of toys. But for the most part, like, you know, yeah, they threw in Barbie later on. They had Mr. Potato Head. But this movie is very aggressively about licensed toys.
Yeah.
You know, which in popular entertainment we've always sort of thought of as being in these separate
categories.
They have
to remain in their own kit.
Like, I remember in the 70s when Superman versus Spider-Man came out.
It was a big thing.
It was a huge thing. Yeah, you know, because that was like Coke and Pepsi present, you know,
right.
Ka-Pepsi, you know. It was
Ka-Pepsi.
Nobody was going to do that, you know. So the idea that you can have a movie that has Batman next to The Simpsons, next to Lord of the Rings, next to, you know,
Shaquille O'Neal,
you know, the 2002.
And Shakespeare,
yeah, you know, that's.
And Michelangelo.
Exactly. You know, there's a lot of, that stuff I found really inventive and really cool. It's directed by the guys that did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and 21 Jump Street. So, I mean.
And those guys are great.
They're smart and they're funny and they make movies that shouldn't be.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is also delightful. Yeah. And so is 21 Jump Street.
But anyway, as you mentioned, there is a third act turn, which a lot of people seem to be okay with, although I've had some people...
Fine, let them be okay with it. It's terrible.
I think it's terrible, and I've had people on Twitter sort of thank me for pointing it out because they agree with me from, you know, when I talked about it on What the Flick. For me, it takes me out of the movie.
Absolutely.
It takes me out of the movie, and it explains
the movie.
It turns the subtext, the apparent subtext, like any four-year-old in the theater.
Well, not any four-year-old.
I think almost any four-year-old is going to get it. But they, you know, lest they don't, the movie makes it text.
Yeah. And that's all we'll say about it.
But, you know, that's the part that made Christy Lemire cry, because we don't have children, so we can't understand.
Look.
I have no idea what any of that means.
I don't know what's going on in Christy's life. I'm sure she meant well. If she were here, I would argue with her and tell her that her feelings are wrong.
There you go. I would love that if she listened to this show, but I don't know that she does. Anyway,
she's busy. She's got a child.
She's got a child to raise. With our foolishness. So anyway, yeah, see the Lego movie. I mean, I didn't like it as much as Dave did, but I definitely recommend it. I think it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of great stuff in there.
Yeah, it really is. It's really very cool. I really, really enjoyed it. What makes it an imperfect film for me is the tired old, you know, hero's journey thing.
Yeah.
And that third act thing that happens. Otherwise, it's great. Like, if you can forgive it those things, you're going to have a blast because it really is cool. And the 3D is great, too. The 3D just, like, zooms out at you and pulls you into it, and it's really, really wonderful 3D.
Yeah, they put some thought into it, for sure. Then two movies this week that only one of us saw. I'll get Cavemen out of the way.
Do it. You have 60 seconds because nobody cares.
It's a movie that seems to only exist to make that awkward moment seem better in retrospect. It stars Skylar Astin and Chad Michael Murray and some other dudes as bros in L.A. And they are single. Hooray. And they're looking for ladies. And
hooray Skylar, for bros.
Skylar Astin wants to write a screenplay, but of course doesn't about it's a love story. Me but too. He doesn't know anything about love. I want to write
one
so.
Too. You know. Everybody wants to write a screenplay.
And Camilla Bell is in it as Skylar Astin's...
I will never write a screenplay.
We know.
Rest assured.
Skylar Astin's best friend, who is, of course, the perfect woman for him, but they're too stupid to figure that out. Yeah, this movie is... It's a horror. It's funny. This week's critic survey on CriticWire was about whether or not it's okay to walk out of movies. And boy, did I want to walk out of Cavemen. But I endured the whole thing. As I said in my response to the survey, there's a point where you can tell that a movie isn't going to get any better, but there's always the possibility it could get even worse.
Yep. Sometimes so, it do.
Yeah, it was. It's the pits. As much as I like Skylar Astin, this movie is just awful. Do not see it. Save yourself.
Vampire Academy, same thing.
Oh, I forgot. That explains that. come on, you have to give it a little something.
I'm bummed about it. It hurt me. It is from Daniel Waters and Mark Waters. Hmm. Now, you know those names because one of those cats wrote Heathers, and the other one directed Mean Girls. I will give this film this. It passes the Bechdel test.
Definitely.
The young women in the film are talking about something other than men in the movie. Great. It's just that what they're talking about is vampire wars, and I don't care anymore about vampires ever for the rest of my life. Bela Lugosi is actually dead. And you know what put him there? Movies like this. And all the other movies about vampires that have come out in the past 5 minutes. Every other movie has been about a vampire for the past decade.
My name is Twilight, and I am a Dracula.
Oh, God. I'm sick to the end of my patience with vampires and werewolves and the supernatural and the hijacking of every single emotional element of adolescence and then grafting it onto the high vampires and the werewolves and the monsters and the I'm losing my sanity.
Having said that, this is about some girls in a boarding school about for vampires where they learn magic too, and there's romances and fighting, and also a lot of Heathersy, Mean Girls, Pretty and Pinkish sort of stuff. Now, one of the reasons that there's the Pretty and Pinkish stuff in it.
Oh, yes.
Is that the lead girl who plays Rose? Her last name is Deutsch, but I forget her first name.
Zoe
Deutsch. She's the daughter of Howard Deutsch, director of Pretty in Pink.
Also of Leah Thompson.
And whose mother is Leah Thompson.
So her parents
made
Some Kind of Wonderful.
Her parents are Some Kind of Wonderful and Pretty in Pink. That's basically those two movies got married and made this daughter.
Well, it's like
in the middle of Vampire Academy, to a boy who's bothering her and won't leave her alone because he wants the best for her, she says, "Ducky, I don't have time for your feelings right now." And I said to myself, very clever. Well played. Well played, Pretty in Pink.
Well, you know,
Some Kind of Wonderful.
It's like we said about Monuments Men. On paper, yeah, who doesn't want to see a movie about
who
teen
doesn't
girls
see,
written by Dan Waters, directed
who doesn't
by
want to see another teenage girl movie from these guys? Because these guys somehow, magically, know teenage girls in a way that is
really biting and really clever and really smart and really funny and not condescending and not.
It's but then they Sweet had Valley to, High filtered through Sun Tzu.
But then they had to adapt this YA series of books. This is a series of books, YA fiction. Thanks, YAs, for all the fiction you've been giving us lately. Seriously, go away. Start reading some A books. You're not Y enough anymore. Like, here's the thing. When I was a kid, when I was a YA, there was not much YA fiction. I mean, it existed.
It was Judy Blume.
It existed, but you know when I read it? When I was in sixth grade.
Right.
Because you know why? I wanted to be older. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be older right away. I wanted to be older as like fast as I could be.
17 magazine is geared to 13-year-olds.
Yeah. But now suddenly YA means grown-up.
Harry Potter's fault.
It's Harry Potter's popularity's fault.
Yes, obviously.
But then it's really actually Twilight's fault.
Well, yes, that too.
For being garbagely written books, turned into barely watchable films until Bill Condon got the last two.
Right.
And made them something you could look at and not want to kill yourself.
He went clear.
Yeah. And I just I'm so tired of everything being for 12-year-old children. And this is the perfect example of people who have known better and done better coming on board a project that was doomed.
From the get-go.
From the get-go. That was never going to be their voice. That was never going to be about their abilities. It was always going to be about building a franchise, making it as bland as possible, giving us a completely convoluted and exposition-heavy plot at the expense of the characterizations of these young women. And made by the Weinstein Company, who are notorious for taking films away from filmmakers and chopping them to pieces and diluting their voice. And so I don't even blame the Waters. Like, I still think they're cool. And I know they've both been involved in other not good films. But that doesn't make me love them any less, because I still believe. I'm a true believer. But this is just bad.
I'm sorry.
Depressing.
That is a pity. Yeah. Then you saw a very different movie also that I had not seen.
I did. I saw The Last of the Unjust. Now, I have had an argument with you on this show once before about Shoah and how it is a masterpiece, and you are wrong about it. About it being too long and badly edited or whatever it is. Whatever your little concerns are about Shoah. Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you could see what I just did. I waved my hand in a brushing away sort of motion toward him. I'm doing it right now.
It was all in your voice.
As I speak.
They got it.
And so this is now. If
I'm going to go make myself a cup of coffee while you.
Oh, are you? You're not even going to listen to this part of
it. I'm going
to
listen, but I have nothing to contribute.
All right. Okay, so Shoah, the masterpiece of Holocaust documentaries. 9.5 hours, which I know makes some of you just laugh out loud. But I've never seen all 9.5 hours in one go. I've seen it twice. Each time, both times I've seen it, it has been in small mini-series style chunks. I have read somewhere that Mr. Lanzmann himself thinks that if you do not watch all of it in one go, that you are bad and wrong. But you know what? You got to get up and pee. You got to get a snack. You got to, you know, not want to kill yourself completely. And Shoah is an overwhelming film. Even if you watch it in hour, 9 1-hour, you know, chunks, by the end of it, you will feel the desolation that it was meant to convey. So in the subsequent years, Mr. Lanzmann took the 350 hours of raw footage that he shot to condense down into the 9.5 10 if you live in Europe, Showa, and made other features. You know, he shaped other pieces of this footage into its own narrative. He made A Visitor from the Living, which I have not seen. He made The Karski Report, which is basically a short film. It's like 50 minutes long. Those two I have not yet seen, although I've got them here on the Criterion box that the awesome Matt, my art film bro, lent to me. He was my chaperone yesterday to see Last of the Unjust. Landsman also made the incredibly rousing Sobibor, which is about the uprising at Sobibor and is about 100 minutes long and is just an interview. Like, it is an interview with the guy who helped lead the uprising. Now, this guy...
Would that be the starter? Would you recommend that as a starter for people?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, actually, I wouldn't. I would say you start with Showa. Okay, you start with Showa. Prove yourself. Start with Showa. Take it as take it any way you can take it, 15 minutes at a time if you have to. You watch Showa. That's your homework. Everybody listening to this show. Because you're Alonzo Duralde is wrong. And if you go read reviews and the historical record written by other film writers, they will tell you the same thing I'm telling you. Unless you're Pauline Kael. You and Pauline Kael. You're a Paulinista or whatever. A Paulette.
I can live with that.
She didn't like it either. But she was wrong, too. She's dead, and she's wrong. But Sobibor is so amazing. It's the interview with the guy who, at the age of 16, ran away from as many concentration camps as he could run away from. He escaped from 8 of them in the course of 6 months. And he would get to these places and be like, oh, dang, they're going to kill us? I'm out of here. Like, and he would just run under the barbed wire in the night, any chance he got. And just through sheer luck, wound up getting tossed back into things like POW camps instead of other concentration camps until he wound up at Sobibor, which is a death camp. And the minute he saw that he was at Sobibor, he thought, oh, no, I got to get out of here too. But this time, he and the other men who were being fed because they were working and were still strong because they were being fed and they were working, they all decided, we're just going to kill all the Germans. And what's so beautiful about this documentary is that it's just this guy's face just talking. And when he says things like, and then we got the axes, he gives us a little smirk to the camera. And you think to yourself, like, what lucky lady got to be his wife? Because this dude is Steve McQueen. A complete badass, but who has no excitement about his badassery. He's just talking to the camera. And every time he reminisces about doing something really heroic and brave and German slaughtery, he just kind of smiles a little bit at the camera.
Is this a long interrupted angle the way Showa is, or does the camera ever like shoot him from a different corner of the room?
Oh, he gets you know, his face, his body, and you get the landscape stuff that you got the same as Showa. Right. Showa is all landscape and interview, and it's contemporary landscape or landscape of the late 70s, early 80s, so that what you're getting is not just the past, but also the present. And I think that's really like the genius of Claude Lanzmann, is that he frames it all right now. And I think one of the things that he says it's Sobibor as the narrator as well. He says, museums, I think this is the beginning of Sobibor where he says this. He says it in the beginning of one of the films, that museums about, for example, the Holocaust, they create memory, but they also create forgetting. And then he says, so now we are going to listen to his living words. And I really love that, because what it really does is force you to feel it there right now. It's not archival footage. It's not reconstruction. It's not reenactment. It's a person alive right now telling you their story. And it was a story in the past, but you're experiencing it with them again.
Isn't that what most documentaries are, though?
Not in the way that he has constructed his films.
Hmm. Anyway, so Last of the Unjust.
So, all of that to say this. We saw Last of the Unjust yesterday, Matt, and I saw it at the Royal with some loud-talking old people.
That's what you get at the Royal.
Old people. You get that at all the Limley theaters because their audience is really
old. Yeah, but especially the Royal's where you have to listen over the oxygen tanks.
I'm 50, and I'm still the youngest melon farmer in the place. Like, it's really crazy there. There and the music hall. Those are really the two spots. Definitely,
that is Ultra Cocker Central.
But they don't know. Here's the thing: they don't know that they're loud because they can't hear themselves anymore. So they're just yelling in the middle of a movie. What did he say? Like, shut up. So anyway, Last of the Unjust is half a show up. It's 3 hours and 40 minutes long. 3 hours and 38.
Almost a third of a show.
A third of a show, yeah. And it is an interview with a rabbi who was, it's a 1975, I think, interview with a rabbi who was the last of the Jewish elders at the Theresienstadt ghetto. Now, the Theresienstadt ghetto was the show ghetto. It was the model ghetto. It was the one the Nazis made propaganda films about. Right. Where everyone's like, we're working and we're singing and we're so happy and Hitler's so great. He gave us this new home. It's his gift to us. He gave us this gift. In reality, Theresienstadt, which was simply a way station for Auschwitz and Birkenau, was a horror show. It was people just dying in the streets and packed, overcrowded, typhus outbreaks and just children dying. And any pregnant woman that gave birth, the baby was immediately taken away and killed. You know, like unbelievable atrocities taking place. But, and here's the weird thing. They got to stay there. Not everybody. Lots of people got sent through to Auschwitz. But a lot of people did get to stay there. Their turn never came. Mm-hmm. And so Mermelstein is the name of this rabbi. He reasoned. And he is a wily cat. Like, he was super pragmatic and knew that they had to go along to get along.
Right.
And so he, you know, worked with the Nazis who ran the camp. And in his own words, he called himself the Scheherazade. He kept telling the story. Mm. He kept the camp open. He kept the ghetto open. He kept it visited. He kept it in the news. Oh. So that as long as people were paying attention to it, he reasoned, they wouldn't liquidate it and send everybody to Auschwitz.
I just remembered why this sounded familiar and why I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Maury Sendak and Angels in America.
Tony Kushner.
Tony Kushner collaborated on an opera about this model town.
Oh, okay.
And they talk about it a lot in the Tony Kushner documentary that came out a few years ago.
All right.
So, yeah, okay.
Anyway, so after the war, he was vilified as a collaborator. Mm. And he, in these interviews, he is like, ducking and dodging all the questions. Like, he's got an answer for everything. He's a fast-talking dude. Mm-hmm. He, you know, was really smart, really well-read. And he's like, this is what I did. This is why I did it. I'm sorry that I didn't cry while I did it. But if I cried, I would be sunk.
Right.
I had to get this done. I did everything I could. And, you know, Claude Lanzmann is like Jacques Hughes, he is the relentless interrogator. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, were you just concerned with saving yourself or saving the ghetto? And he would say stuff like, well, you know, yeah, everyone thinks of themselves. But at the same time, you know, I didn't have a life. No one lived. No one did there. It wasn't living. You were no longer a human being. You just were there. And there is always self-preservation in work. But at the same time, you know, he said, I really wanted to help keep as many people here as I could. So he you know, by the end of the movie, you're like, I guess I get it. You know, right. Maybe you were a bit of a collaborator, but somebody lived because of you.
Sure.
You know, you may have gone about it the wrong way and made a lot of mistakes, and maybe you got, you know, excited about your own power at moments or whatever, but
you could make the case that Oskar Schindler was a collaborator.
Yes.
But at the same time, he managed to, like, you know,
yeah.
He worked within the system and saved a lot of lives.
Right. So it's an amazing film. It's not like Shoah, because there is archival footage.
Right.
And there is archival photographs. And a lot of the movie is Landsman, who is now 110. He's 1,000 years old. A lot of it is him walking through what is, you know, Terezin, you know, now, which is just, it's like a neighborhood now. It's him walking through the streets, narrating and reading stuff in a very, you know, I'm old and I can't believe I'm having to tell you this again kind of tone of voice.
We're going to go through this one more time.
Yeah. And he there should be a documentary just about him, you know, after he goes. Yeah.
So, no, okay, I didn't know any of this until you told me. The idea, so Landsman shot all this footage.
350 hours of footage.
Between
73-ish and 84-ish.
And then the rest of his career has just been taking chunks of that and turning into other movies?
Constructing movies out of that footage.
Interesting.
And in the past 25 years-ish, we've gotten approximately 20 hours of those 350 hours.
Wow.
I hope he has entrusted this footage to someone that he knows can keep working with it.
Right.
Because I want to see what else is in there.
Sure.
Like, these movies are so overwhelming and so powerful and so incredible to watch. Because even though all of them, except for the, you know, very young people now, mm-hmm. if you happen to be born in 1944 and
right.
and not die, which is one thing that Marmelstein did. He somehow figured out a way to get them not to kill
the babies.
The babies. Oh. And so, I don't know, he explains, you know, negotiations to, like, let's not kill the babies. You know, like, so if you were born in 1944 in a camp and you're still alive, you're still pretty old now.
Yeah. No, I mean, Landsman.
But these people on the film, the people in the films, the interviewees, they're alive. In the film, they're alive. And they feel like they're happening now. The clothes are, you know, from the 70s and early 80s, but they're alive.
No, I mean, Landsman was definitely smart about knowing that he had a window.
Right.
To tell this story.
Right.
You know, for the survivors to still be around, you know. I mean, that's why, like, paragraph 175 was so vital.
And so,
those guys, like, I think they're all gone now.
They're all gone now,
You know, they got the last ones, and they got them, you know, if they'd done it a year later, you know, forget
it.
Right.
This film is currently playing in New York, Los Angeles, Encino, Irvine, Miami, West Palm Beach, and Boca Raton. I assume it will go out to other cities, probably museums.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll do a lot of one night, you know.
But if you get a chance, like, look for it, be on the lookout for it coming to your town, watch Shoah in the interim. It's worth your time. Yes, it's a bummer, but you know life is a bummer. So just do it.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's DVD picks.
The Train. I mean, in addition to Shoah. The Train, which I already was a DVD pick once before.
Yes, you
already did. The Train is Burt Lancaster, John Frankenheimer. Burt Lancaster stars in a John Frankenheimer film from 1964 about transporting art.
through rescuing it from the Nazis.
Rescuing it from the Nazis. And Burt Lancaster is a man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a gun. And it's exciting.
It's a great movie.
It is a great, great film. That's my recommendation for the week. Yeah.
Mine is GBF. A very charming...
Which I still haven't seen.
A very charming...
Sorry, Darren, who is our friend and directed this film.
Gay high school comedy.
I promise I'm going to watch it.
Directed by Darren Stein, written by George Northey. The first-time script that went through the Outfest screenwriting lab. And apparently, George's mentor, Guinevere Turner, suggested that Darren directed the scene from the script that they, you know, every year at Outfest, they take the five screenwriter lab scripts and act out a scene from them, you know, on stage. And so she hooked the two of them up, and Darren liked it so much, he said, I'm going to make this into a movie. And lo and behold, he did. And this week, it's out on DVD. And I was thinking about it when you were talking about Vampire Academy, about,
right.
You know, there's no vampires in this movie, and it feels very, you know, contemporary and true, and it's, but it's also, I think, you know, kind of a John Hughes homage, throwback kind of thing, but it's very fun and colorful, and a lot of fun performances. Megan Mullally is in
it. You're fun and colorful.
A lot of very cool young actors, so yeah, GBF, check it out.
Got all kinds of letters. Hang on, I'm pulling them up. Here they are.
Woo!
This one's from Eric. Alonzo, maybe you could mention my birthday on the podcast? Sure. So my birthday is January 31st, so we're late.
Oh, well. Happy recent birthday.
Na 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 na. Whatever the song they sing at Chili's is.
Bennigan's.
Yeah. Would that mean sometime in the middle of March would be my linoleum knife birthday observed? Middle of February.
There you go.
Pre-Valentine's Day.
Early February, even.
Matter of fact,
say.
Yeah. Maybe you could have a new feature on the podcast regarding birthdays. Like Entertainment Tonight does, but only for people you guys know and for loyal listeners, such as you, Eric. Give a well wish to the real person and then give a few names of people in the biz who have the same day. I just like it when people call it the biz.
Oh, only, can I do the Entertainment Tonight Somebody Died music in the background?
Yeah.
Na, 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 na. I'm just guessing. I haven't watched that show in decades, so they may have completely changed the theme song.
I have Tallulah Bankhead and Carol Channing. Don't know if that would be too much of a shift from focus for your liking. I just know people like hearing their names. It's true. Eric. It's your birthday.
Well, Eric, thanks for your letter, but that's not an idea that we're going to do, I don't think.
Sexy Eric. Happy birthday, Eric. We really like you.
You're special.
Keep having birthdays. Keep listening to Linoleum Knife, Eric. We're really into you.
You're doing your love songs on the coast.
That's right. I'd like to dedicate Celine Dion's It's All Coming Back to Me Now. For you, Eric, for your birthday.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Happy birthday. We're not doing that.
No.
We're doing it for you.
Yes.
If anyone writes us and says, please say my birthday name, please announce my birthday on the podcast, obviously we're going to do it. But it's not going to be a regular thing.
No. I
just decided that that's...
Don't do that.
No. Yeah, you can. If you want to, you can. If it's important, to you, okay. It's important to Eric, and we like Eric. I know Eric from Facebook. I'm familiar with Eric.
I see.
He's not just some random dude. Okay. He's a good dude.
Oh, so you really think that he is sexy? Then I thought you were just pulling that out of your hat.
Eric's real sexy.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I see how it is. Fine.
All right. So. And then he says, okay, it's not that great of an idea.
You're right.
Having this conversation with himself already. But I've been listening to you guys since the very first episode, which makes you deserve to have your name.
I suppose so.
Yeah. And it's the first suggestion I have given. So I'm happy with it, as is mostly because my mother hates it. Remember, he's the
one. Oh, this guy, yes. Yeah. The mother who hates the show.
Because I sound, we're not professional. And I sound weird.
Yes.
So I always make sure it's turned up high enough to annoy the ever-loving piss out of her. Her favorite movie is Dirty Dancing, so maybe she'll pick up some better taste, even if she's forced to.
I don't hate Dirty Dancing. Dave White does.
Yeah, it's a terrible film. It is a terrible film.
I can't defend Dirty Dancing, but I still enjoy it.
This is from Our Dynamoxy.
Yeah.
She writes, I am hanging my head in shame for my misattribution of the Mark Wahlberg movie Lone Survivor. My only excuse is that when I wrote my very long email, in order not to make it seem even longer, I chose to abridge a section on how I had not, at the time, seen any reference to the movie other than the one trailer in the theater and your review. So, everything you said about the title itself being a spoiler and how everyone knows no one lives but Mark Wahlberg were all a surprise to me because the trailer I saw didn't really make it clear that Mark Wahlberg was even there in the barrage of shaky cam shots on the screen. But also, I was never going to see the Mark Wahlberg movie Lone Survivor in theaters. Probably not on video, either. Anyway, I also had to research and confirm the titles for both of the other movies mentioned, so I guess I just got too darn confident with the first one, sadly.
Oh, well. The thought is appreciated.
Don't do it again! This is from Dan, who sent us the tape player that didn't work.
Oh, bless his heart.
We think... Dan, we're in love with you. We're in love with you, Dan.
You're so good to us.
We'd like to dedicate Celine Dion's You're Everything I Am. I am everything I am because you love me. For you.
On the coast.
Going out on the coast. Love songs on the coast. Alonzo, I'm really sorry to hear that. No one's writing to me. They're all writing to you this week. Yeah. Here I thought I was doing a good deed, and instead I'm just providing comic fodder for you and Dave, which perhaps is also a good deed, but not the one I intended. I must admit I was a bit disappointed when I started the podcast this morning. I was hoping to hear that familiar sound of the tape being put in the player, the door closing, and the play button clunking down. Then some hand-selected music, followed by Dave's gravelly linoleum knife. Instead, I get Dave singing a song thanking me for sending something that didn't work. Cue disappointment, then mortification. Then the story about the carefully wrapped corpse. Cue embarrassment. Then the final remark about having to take it to the electronic recycling place. By which point, I was just sort of in shock and wasn't really hearing anything. In the end, I'm just really mad at myself for not trying the damn thing myself before I dragged it down to FedEx. It must have been pretty funny from where you sat, and someday I'll be able to laugh at it, too. Someday.
No, Dan. You can laugh now.
The next one is from Jonathan. Jonathan P. Hello, Alonzo, and freewheeling Dave White. That's how I like to be. That's how I like to be addressed.
Calling you freewheeling is like when they call a tall guy shorty. It's like cute and ironic.
I am the freewheeling Dave White. Before I properly begin my letter, thank you for the wonderful items I received around Christmas time. Both I and the friend I bought a copy for are enjoying Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Very much, and I have already received many questions about what is linoleum knife while wearing my official t-shirt.
Excellent.
For my letter proper, I have made my official top 10 for 2013. It took a while for certain films to get to me since I live in Louisiana. However, I have finally seen enough to where I feel comfortable forming a top 10. Number 10, Ain't Them Body Saints. It is slow-moving, but I viewed the film as an exercise in patience. It felt like a slow heartbreak.
Did you ever see it?
I did not get to see it.
It's gorgeous,
but... I want to see it. I just haven't had a chance to...
The writing kind of...
No time. I haven't had time.
No, I know.
Being freewheeling
takes up a whole lot of time. No, it's beautifully shot.
There are outfits involved. There are hairstyles.
I just wasn't.
There are beverages that one must consume to be freewheeling. Seriously, it's a full time job.
Yes, by all means.
12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
Rush.
Mm-hmm.
The Spectacular Now.
Sure.
Stoker. Thank you. Frozen. Francis Ha.
Mm-hmm.
American Hustle,
mm-hmm.
Her,
mm-hmm.
and short-term 12 is his number one.
Nice.
It's touching yet uplifting. It's small scale but uses that to its advantage. I'm not a social worker. I still felt a personal connection to the film since I am a public school English teacher in an area where some of the kids in the film remind me of some of the kids I have seen in real life. Thank you. Also, before I go, I emailed last year about my best friend and I having an Oscar bet on who picks the most winners.
Oh, yes, right.
The loser had to watch a horrible movie of the other's choosing. Mm-hmm. I won, and he had to watch Bride Wars while I was able to avoid The Love Guru. We are doing the bet again this year. His movie choice is The Love Guru. You're going to see The Love Guru one of these days. Right. He's not going to give up.
The hammer will
and
fall.
I believe that he should keep making The Love Guru his choice until he punishes you with it. Mm. I haven't quite decided on mine yet, so any suggestions are welcome.
Grown Ups too.
Ooh. Yeah. Grown Ups 2 is, yeah, it's torment. Mm. What else?
Johnny Be Good.
Remind me which one that
is. Anthony Michael Hall, Robert Downey.
Oh, that's really bad, too.
Football movie.
Okay, that's a good one. What else?
If Cavemen is out on DVD in time, you might consider
probably
that
won't
one.
Be. There are so many. You know what? Go to movies.com. Go to my page. Click on my face. You'll get the page of all my reviews. Anything. And click on star rating. Order them by star rating from the bottom up. Don't pick any that have 0 stars. Because 0 stars generally means that it's so bad.
It's entertaining.
But it must be seen.
Yeah.
It's so bad that you absolutely must see it. That's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
Currently streaming on Netflix, by the way.
Yeah, by the way. But 1 star or half a star.
Half a star.
Half a star.
Half a star for you. That's
the half a stars are the ones that are just will make you feel dead inside. So just do that. Go pick one.
Like a Cellular? I don't know. What those, some of those like January horror movies that you've had to do.
Cellular was fine.
Jumbie Wants to Be Born.
The Unborn is Unborn is a zero. Unborn is so great. Speaking of great Holocaust
films.
Fear.com. Yeah. No, wait. Is Cellular the one about the cellular phones?
No, wait. Cellular's not the one where the cellular phone gets, where the cell phone gets possessed. That's the one with like Chris Evans and somebody gets kidnapped, right? What's the one with the cell phone that gets possessed? One Missed Call.
One Missed Call. But One Missed Call is kind of hilarious,
though. Fear.com,
because they perform an exorcism on the phone.
Right.
Phone gets an exorcism in Fear.com in One Missed Call.
I summon the friends and family plan out of this device.
So
I will change contracts.
Go pick a half a star from movies.com. Yeah. That'll do you.
Totally.
Yeah. All right, so here's the part where we tell you about how to give us money.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them about the Apple. It's time for all of you to do the BIM.
That's right.
And BIM means believe in money.
That you give to us.
That you give to us.
By the way, who are we thanking for their generous tip? I forwarded you the email.
Oh.
David, I believe is his name. I believe his name is David. Somebody gave us a very nice tip.
David M.
David M. We appreciate it very much.
Wow. I mean, it was like, that was, you know, here's, well, we have a special message for David M. that we're going to email him privately. And it's not a dirty message. but it's related to something that we are about to set up. In terms of commentaries.
Once we have,
we're not going to announce right
okay,
now.
Okay, once we have more under our belt, we will have other things
right
happening.
Now.
But we're not
going to announce
this
that.
This is our second one. We have directed, we have recorded a feature length plus a little intro commentary about the Apple, the insane 1980 disco musical cum biblical allegory. It's streaming on Netflix. You can get it on DVD. And we recommend that you watch the movie first because it is a whole bucket of crazy that you experience unfiltered. And then watch it again with us. And
it is not a Mystery Science Theater riff tracks kind of
No. We actually, like, have facts about this movie.
It is an extra episode of Linoleum Notes.
Yeah,
we talk about the film.
We analyze, we discuss. It's not, Riff Trax did this movie, but we're not doing that. We don't do that.
That's their job, not ours.
We talk about it the way we talk about any other movie on this show. We just pick one movie and talk about it nonstop for the entire running time. You don't have to watch it with the movie. You can listen to it at the gym or in your car or wherever you normally listen to this program, but you can
while you're walking down the street, being freewheeling me.
You can watch the movie and listen to us talk about it at the same time if you so desire.
All right, let's get to the important thing.
It
costs $1.99.
A veritable steal. And all you have to do is PayPal $1.99 to our website, to our email address, which is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also write us at that address with any questions or comments or your top 10 lists or anything else. But you can PayPal $1.99 to linoleumpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. We will send you the audio file for our commentary for The Apple.
Yes.
It is our goal to record a new one every month.
Yes.
And we'll keep you posted as to
when it's not just a goal, it's what's going to happen.
And it is our goal to record a new one every month. And so as the new ones become available, we will let you know. But in the meantime, you can PayPal us $1.99. We will send you the Apple commentary. And
we are already actively brainstorming the one for February.
You can enjoy it.
It's going to happen. It's going to be fun to enjoy.
It will be so fun to enjoy. And as soon as Dave stops holding on to the checkbook with both hands in a death grip, we will be ordering more Linoleum Knife t-shirts.
I got death grips.
And when those become available, we'll let you know. We have learned from the first go-round that we need a vaster cornucopia of sizes. You people range from small to 3X, so we will do our best.
A lot of you are real tiny. That's what we learned.
Yes, y'all are smaller folk than we originally thought.
Y'all are smaller people than we imagined.
So we will be getting them in a plethora of sizes, and when those become available, once again, we will let you know.
What's this voice you're doing now? A plethora, once again.
I was reminded of...
Who are you? Who are you being right now?
I was doing the guy from Three Amigos.
I see.
You have a plethora of piñatas. So... as always, we thank you for listening. You can check out our friends all over the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out Rotten Tomatoes Radio. I was had the good fortune to go on their show this week on SiriusXM with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. Also, if you are a SiriusXM listener, check out the Frank DeCaro Show. And check out Derek and Romaine. Dave and I will be on this Friday, Valentine's Day, February 14th, to talk about 80s remakes and why Valentine's Day is stupid. And
to pick a fight with Romaine.
To pick a fight with Romaine, with any luck. She was very cagey last time. She was not having any
conflict.
Watch
out, Romaine. We're coming for you. time to mix it up.
So, tune in for that.
Time for fighting.
That will be fun. Also, check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movies podcast, Film Spotting, SVU, Podcrash, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this program for free at iTunes and leave us a review. That would be great, because the more positive reviews we get, the more prominent our appearance on their homepages. Yes,
that's true.
You can stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com, or you can go to our Facebook page. There's a little app there that allows you to stream the show for free. And while you're at our Facebook page, like us. Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter @LinoleumCast. You can follow me @A.Duraldi, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E. You can follow Dave @D.LelandWhite, all one word. Check into the show at tvtag.com, and again...
Which used to be Get Glue.
Used to be Get Glue.
Right.
And they stopped giving out stickers, but they still allow check-ins.
Oh, no more stickers?
No, I know. It stinks. But one of
Screw them, then.
Listener Steven, by the way, recently had his 100th check-in on GetGlue/TVTag. And so I'm mentioning it now because he wondered what special thing he got, and that was it. and again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can PayPal us the $1.99 for the Apple commentary. And you can also email us there. We'd love to hear from you. We still have some emails to go through, but it's always good to have more. So drop us a line, and we will, if it's not stupid, we'll read it on the show.
Even if it is stupid.
Yeah, that's true. Who am I kidding? Anyway, as always, we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.